and welcome to a new episode of the Computomics podcast. Our guest today is Garlich von Essen, the Secretary General and CEO at Euroseeds. Garlich, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I've heard someone whispered that you're very interested in history and politics. And I was curious, which person, dead or alive, would you like to meet and why?
Probably Friedrich August von Hayek. He is one of my all-time favorites as an author and as a thinker. Never had the chance to meet him, and I can't meet him anymore, meanwhile, but I'm still very fond of his books, and I read them occasionally.
Wonder, is there a specific title that you would recommend, a book or a publication by him?
Yes. Well, I'm not sure what the exact translation was in English, but in German it's called Recht, Gesetzgebung und Freiheit. That's the title of the book. It's actually three books form a series. But that's one of his main works.
Thank you. Well, we might research that and put that in the show notes as a little Easter egg. but obviously
it's
our main...
pardon? It's a heavy one.
Well,
a heavy Easter egg.
A professor of mine, when I was still at university, used to call these books rat-killing size, you know, when they're like these really thick tomes. But why not? I'm assuming a lot of people would be interested. But obviously, our main topic of conversation today is Euroseeds, your role there, and your work. You've been at Euroseeds, if I'm informed correctly, for about 20 years now. What do you consider milestones in your professional history there?
Well, I started actually in 2000, so it's almost a quarter of a century, meanwhile.
Wow. So,
and I never expected it to last that long, to be honest. But I started off to actually establish an office in Brussels for the plant breeding industry, because there was none. Most of the work was done from various capitals in the EU and just with occasional travel to Brussels. But since then, we have grown to a sizable Brussels lobby organization of now 15 people working for the sector, permanent in Brussels, with a respective large-scale office, a much wider membership. So milestones, if I would say, one for sure has been the enlargement, not of the European Union in this case, but indeed of Euroseeds as an organization. Mm-hmm. Extending it not only to the Eastern European countries that joined the EU, but also way beyond that. So we have members now in many other parts of Europe, and including even meanwhile Africa. So we're getting bigger, more diverse, which is making also the whole thing very interesting. I think the other one has been that we have finally, after many, many years of discussion, managed to bring the subject of new technology in plant breeding to a political and a decision-making level in the European Union. So for the first time since a good three decades, actually, we seem to have a positive attitude in the European Union towards new plant breeding techniques. So that I consider to be another milestone, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely something I want to go into. Maybe we'll just use that in point directly. Yeah. I'm assuming you're referring to the new genomic techniques regulation.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Could you, for those of our listeners, we have a wide ranging, diverse audience as well, maybe just roughly sketch out what is the regulatory framework that was introduced through this?
Yeah. So we're talking actually about gene editing. So we're talking about CRISPR-Cas is probably the most famous technology of this kind. So the difference between these new technologies and what we used to know as classical genetic modification is the fact that we're not working outside but inside the genome of a defined species. So we're editing the existing genome. So there's nothing added. There's nothing that is outside of the gene pool of that specific species, like a bacterium gene or anything like that. So a wheat is still a wheat and an apple is still an apple. But we are now capable of precisely editing individual genetic sequences to, for example, erase a certain susceptibility to a specific pest or disease. or to maybe also alter things that are very important for nutritional value. Mm-hmm. So, and all of that, as I said, within the gene pool of the respective plant. So we're not talking transgenics as we used to do with the genetically modified organisms, but we're talking within a regular plant. So basically mutations that could also occur naturally. Mm-hmm. And these will now hopefully soon be regulated differently. So we will look at the plant and not at the process. With the old GMO legislation, the decisive element was the technology used. So if you use a certain technique, the resulting product would always be a GMO and be regulated as a GMO with all the respective consequences. Whereas now we are, for these specific technologies, we're saying it's not the technology that matters. It is the question of what is the result. And if the result is something that could also occur naturally, then we will also regulate it as a classical plant variety rather than as a GMO.
Right. So what would you say? I mean, obviously, that must be the key element of the regulation. Why is it important to have that switch? You kind of alluded to it, referring to the consequences, but mm-hmm. why is it better? Why are you happy that this has happened?
Well, I think there are three reasons. One is logical. You should not regulate things differently that are actually the same just because you used a certain methodology to get to that result. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is a logical approach in product-based legislation. It's the product and its merits that you decide. That's one. The second is the existing GMO legislation has proven to be completely ineffective in Europe. We have not seen a single GMO product passing through the legislative framework and be authorized for cultivation since 1998, I think. So it's basically an empty shell as far as product release is concerned. And there are two reasons for that. One is it's very complicated and politicized. So it's not a decision that is made by scientists or by administrators. It's a decision made by politicians. And that usually is not the way that you do product authorizations. The second is the regulation as it stands today is extremely expensive. So to deregulate a GMO product would cost you somewhere between 70 and 150 million euro.
Wow.
Nobody can pay for that. And therefore, the technology and also the obvious possibilities of the technology never really materialized. It established a very high entry barrier into this market. And we have therefore only seen, also in the rest of the world, only very limited product developments of very specific kinds, but not a broad adoption across the breeding community, and definitely not for niche crops or specialty markets.
And where do you see maybe the immediate to midterm outlook with this new regulation, which I think it was just April 24th, 2024, so very recent. It does usually take some time for this kind of regulation to actually take effect, to have visible impact in the market. But how do you see this developing?
Well, first of all, we are not yet done. So we have done an important step forward, which is that positive vote by the European Parliament. Mm-hmm. But the European Parliament is only a co-legislature. There's another one, which is the member states. Mm-hmm. And the Council of Ministers has not yet established its own position. So that is still missing. We hope to see progress still this year. But it's most likely that we will arrive at some form of an agreement between the two institutions on that new text, either by the end of this year or maybe in the first half of 2025. And I think it's fair to say that there will be no immediate effect visible to you and me as customers or as consumers.
Right.
Because it takes a couple of years for varieties to actually be registered according to regular procedures. Any plant variety in Europe has to pass through a variety authorization procedure, and that will not change. And that usually takes 2 to 3 years minimum. Mm-hmm. So meaning the first varieties that could come to the market are still a couple of years away. What we will see, I think, fairly immediately is that we will see a lot more research, mm-hmm. A lot more product development in companies. So companies will see the legal certainty, and with that also the economic certainty behind their investment decisions guaranteed. And based on that, we'll have the ability to say, now we feel confident that we can invest in this. So there will be a delay in the visibility of products, for sure, like always. But I think in investment decisions and product development, we will see relatively quick effects.
So one could say it's very likely to give a huge charge to plant innovation, to the yes. developmental stages that Absolutely. Aren't visible to consumers yes, like you and sure. me in the
yeah,
supermarket.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. In the first phase, it will be more, let's say, industry internal, mm-hmm. Because it will be technologies that then will be fully implemented in the breeding toolbox of companies across all the different species that are relevant and across very different traits that the company is concentrate on. And all of that will result in respective products coming to the market. But between, let's say, the investment in the research and the product development and the final product actually hitting the market and reaching farmers, and then a year later maybe, or half a year later, you and me on supermarket shelves or wherever, that is inevitable. That would always be the case. Mm-hmm.
We've jumped into this topic based off what you consider milestones in your mm-hmm. in your career at Euroseeds. So I think I mean it's obvious that this, and you've said this, is the product of many years of lobbying and mm-hmm. your work. Can you take us behind the stage a little bit? How do you lobby for a change like this? in so far as you can.
Yeah. No, I can. There's no secrecy here of any kind. I mean, we are, as Euroseeds, we are one of the many regular lobby organizations that are based in Brussels. We are properly registered in a transparency register that has been established by the Commission and the Parliament. So people know who we are and what we do, who we represent. So we have to be transparent on all of that. They also even know how much money we're actually spending on that as an industry. So all of that is publicly available information. And what we do is also not rocket science or anything strange. What we do is, on the one end, we are, if I may say so, the eyes and ears of our industry. Mm-hmm. So we monitor policy developments, regulatory developments, things that happen in Brussels. And we also obviously are informed about things that happen in the industry. So our members will let us know we are working on this, or we're having a problem here, or we cannot move our material from A to B because. So we also suck up, if I may say so, all of that information from our members through dedicated working groups and others. And the combination of the two will lead us to concrete proposals, either comments on proposals coming from the European Commission or developing our own proposals for something that should become a European Commission mm-hmm. proposal. And that is what we share with the respective stakeholders, so with our partners, of course, so that's farmers, for example, but also processing industries, consumer organizations, etc. So we will discuss with them as well. We will discuss with the legislator, so with Parliament and Council, and obviously foremost in the beginning with the European Commission. And we will accompany that decision-making process. So we will give our advice on proposals, on alternatives, on anything that would come out as ideas from the decision-making procedure in the best interest of our members. So what is very important is we, meaning Euroseeds as such, we do not take decisions. the decisions are taken by our members. So it is the industry that takes the decision. We, meaning the Euroseed Secretariat, we are the messenger. No? We are the ones that will take those proposals, those ideas, those positions to the legislator. So that is our role. And we also usually do follow up, meaning we monitor how do things actually develop over time. Mm-hmm. Have we achieved our objective? Does the legislation work in practice? Is the implementation done properly by all the member states? Because there may always be some hiccup somewhere that you have overlooked. That is very normal. So that we then may need to look for amendments. No? So that's a very regular process and a very transparent one as well. No? Because also all, by the way, all the documents that we do share with the European Commission are in the end also publicly available upon request. No? So lobbying doesn't mean shady characters with black briefcases and lots of money walking the corridors of the European Commission. It's usually a very well regulated process with a lot of transparency.
Mm-hmm. I definitely didn't intend to insinuate anything in that direction. although I mean, I'm sure the word, depending on, you know, what the background is of our audience or whoever is listening, it does sometimes have that connotation, but I think it's important. And that's why I wanted to know is, you know, how does that come about? Because the value chain is complex. These regulatory systems and processes are super complex. So how do we enact change? And you've mentioned
what you need, if I may, what you actually need is you need two things. You need competence. Because why would anybody in politics listen to you? Mm-hmm. Whether you represent an NGO or an industry body doesn't actually matter. Only if you're useful, if you can provide input that can help to shape the legislation in a positive manner. So if you add expertise to the decision-making process. So that's decisive. And the second thing that is decisive is you need to be trustworthy. So trustworthy also means that you need to be truthful in what you supply as information, positive, negative, show all the facts, don't hide things, not because otherwise people say, okay, we have followed this or that information, and we find out a couple of years later that we have not been told the truth. Mm-hmm. Then people won't speak to you again. And we are obviously a continuous follower of legislation. It's not a one-off thing where you just provide input on a single file and then the organization ceases to exist. We are already here now for 25 years. Our predecessor organizations were there since the late 60s. So you can only have that continuity if you continuously prove to be useful, meaning you are competent and you're trustworthy.
Makes complete sense. I'm wondering if, because you mentioned that obviously, an important part of your work is to gain from your members, which encompass thousands at this point of companies, of various organizations. What is something that they're kind of looking at that there is a concern now, that they're working on now, that is kind of feeding into you, into your work at this point? Because this regulation, you're still going to follow. You mentioned that, but it's already at a very far-reaching point. So what are the next kind of focus topics that you're working on?
I think there are two. One is, and that is to some extent linked to what we just discussed, the arrival of these new technologies also very likely will go hand in hand, and we can already see that in other parts of the world, hand in hand with new companies entering the market, new business models that are being developed. So it will bring change. And one important element here is the question, what will that do to the way the companies nowadays conduct their research? To what extent are they able to make use of competitors' material for further breeding and further improvement, which is allowed under the existing legislation of so-called plant breeders' rights? So your intellectual property on the final product that you're bringing to the market. So if I have a product and you have a product, we can actually buy each other's seed and we can use that for further research and reading, so to improve what we already have. That is explicitly allowed and that is explicitly wanted to spread innovation broadly and quickly and at very low cost. So next to that, we also have plant breeding innovation that is protected by patents. So that is possible for technologies as such, but also to specific traits that are being developed with these new technologies, and that in the end will end up in a plant variety, so in a bag of seed. So there is a certain overlap, obviously, between these two IP systems. And the question is, how can we, if at all, reconcile these two systems that they can work hand in hand, which is what we have tried for many, many years, since the mid-90s when the first biopatenting directive was coming about, but which has proven to be difficult. It's not an easy one. And with every new step of development of technology or practices, new challenges arise. So that is one area where we see a lot of discussion, both within the industry and outside of it. The other one is the actual rules and regulations that govern the way that the companies may market their products and, well, first get them authorized by the public authorities and then may market their products. So the classical seed marketing legislation that dates back to the, well, at least in its essence, back to the 1960s, is being overhauled as we speak. And there we have not been that successful, if I may call it that way, in convincing the European Parliament of the importance of certain elements of that legislation. So there we will continue that discussion with a new parliament after the elections and with the Council of Ministers. But there, unlike with the novel genomic techniques, we feel that indeed the legislation is going in the wrong direction and is actually going to hamper the prospects of the industry in Europe.
Why? Like, what is, for example, one maybe aspect of that that is a hindrance?
There are, I think there are two main aspects. One is we see that quite a, or that at least the intention of the European Parliament is to exempt quite significant parts of the plant breeding seed market from the scope of the legislation. So if you are doing certain things, you would not be part of the legislation at all anymore. So meaning the rules don't apply to you. Not only not to you as a person or as an economic actor, but also then partly not to the material that you are developing if it falls in a certain category. And we feel that that is not the right approach. We were in favor of adapted rules, adapted technical standards for different kinds of material or for different markets. But we were and we still are convinced that all seed should fall under the scope of the legislation and should fulfill some basic requirements. Meaning, as a customer, you should know what you're buying. So the product needs to be properly identified. It needs to have a proper technical quality standard that needs to be measured and can be repeated. It needs to be clear who is responsible for it. So identification. So, and that's very important indeed for us, and it must be free from pests and diseases. These were our basic requests, if I may call it that way, to the legislator. And we see that those have not really been taken up because we see that too much seed would in the future be able to come to the market without those specific guarantees. And that is a problem on the one hand for farmers, but it's also a problem for us. Because if we have our, for example, plant our plant breeding activities conducted next to fields where we don't know what's in it, we may be exposed to pests and diseases as breeding companies, as seed producing companies, with all the resulting negative effects.
Interesting topics. Will they be a focus point at the EuroSeeds Congress in Copenhagen in October of this year?
Yes, for sure. All of those subjects will be very high on the agenda. I don't expect that we will have too much news at that point, because as you know, the European Parliament stopped working end of April. That was the last plenary of this term. So we will have an election on 6 to 9 of June. Reconstitution of the parliament and recommencing of work then probably somewhere around September, but then with concentrating on actually establishing a new European Commission. And that usually takes until November, December. And only then will we know what's actually the work program, what's the sales pitch of that new commission, what do they want to concentrate on. We assume we have a good idea that competitiveness, defense, will be at the center of attention. But we've also seen quite a bit of movement around agriculture in particular lately in the European Commission, and we expect that to be reflected in that new work program. And that may have an impact also on these discussions.
Mm-hmm. And you said there won't be too many news on this particular topic, but are there any news or innovations, anything we can expect or look forward to besides the Congress itself?
Besides, the Congress is always a good place to go to.
Exactly.
If you want to get a good overview of where we are heading. And therefore, yes, we will, of course, have updates on all these files that we just discussed. We have one very new element in that Congress, which is what we call the innovation stage, so innovation action stage. So we will, for the first time, actually provide specifically startup companies and SMEs, but also public-private partnerships, with the opportunity to actually pitch for a spot on that innovation stage. During the days of the Congress. So we will have short presentations by individual companies on their latest innovation in relation to farm breeding. And we will select a winner out of that competition, probably around about 10 to 12 companies that will pitch in the end, or that we will see in person then delivering that pitch. And then we will award the EuroSeeds 2024 Innovactor with an award, and make sure that indeed we provide a new platform for engaging the well-established seed sector with some of those new kids on the block and the new ideas that may shape the seed sector in the years to come. So we're very excited about that new concept, and we have seen quite a lot of interest so far. So I hope it will be a successful addition to our Congress setup.
It definitely does sound exciting. Maybe last question, maybe someone's out there listening to our podcast thinking, huh, I'd like to apply to that, to be able to pitch. Where can someone apply?
That is very easy. You just go on our website, so euroseeds.eu. And you will find the link to our Congress. And on that, you will also then find the link to the innovation stage, application form, requirements, background information, etc. So it's all there. And in case there are specific questions, well, there's also a phone number. So you may contact us.
Wonderful. I think that's a perfect place to end on, because sadly our time just flew and we have to come to an end. But we will put everything in the show notes. And I can just say, Galich, thank you so much for your time, for all these insights that you shared. And I hope to have you back at some point.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.